from the crypt.
Hello, boys and ghouls. Welcome to episode 112 of Dads from the Crypt. My name is Jason. I'm joined by Jody Mondo.
Damn, like you have your routine down. You already.
I have my script. I was like eyeballing it, trying not to do it too much. How are you, Mondo?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
Good. And we have our good friend Allison from the Who's There podcast. Welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on. So your show went on a slight hiatus, but is now back in full force. Why don't you tell us about your show and what you got coming up?
So my show is where I interview horror fans and horror creatives about why they like the horror genre, because just normal people like horror movies. And I always get, when I tell people I like horror, they're like, you seem so normal. So that's why I started my show. I come out with new episodes every Tuesday. This Tuesday, I have an episode with the filmmakers from the movie that just came out on VOD. It's called Deliver Us. Roy Lee Koons and Crew Ennis. They were super cool. I'm having Mary Beth Andrews from Dread Central on this month.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, so lots of fun stuff coming up.
Yeah, everyone definitely check her out. You've had some really awesome guests in the past, like myself and Jimmy and Jason. All three have been on there, but also Bob Trait recently, who's been on our show and is director of programming at the Colonial Theater. You have all kinds of, and you ask. I'll be honest, you're a really good interviewer and ask really great questions, and you get a lot of interesting responses, which I think is really cool.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. All right, so we are officially in the month of October, which means we have a lot of horror movies coming out. So we're going to take a little break from our Tales from the Crypt episodes. This month we'll be covering, again, we're doing Saw X tonight. We're going to do Exorcist the Believer, VHS 95, which will be on Shudder. I know, when I try to talk off
the top. You're just off today, man. What's going on?
It's recording earlier. It's recording during the day. I need my night powers. Then we're also going to be covering Trick or Treat, the awesome horror anthology, all throughout this month.
Oh, we're not going to do the 1986 like rock and roll horror movie?
I'm very curious about that, but that's not a horror anthology. So
no, if you haven't seen it, that's a cool movie, just for anybody out there.
It's on my
Allison would hate it, but it's a cool movie.
Not for me. It's made in the 80s. Pass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someday I'll check that out. All right, but again, tonight we're talking about, are we calling it Saw X or Saw 10? What's our opinion here?
It's Saw 10 because an X is Roman numeral for 10.
All right, Mondo, do you want to do the plot synopsis?
Yes, and I'm going to give a very basic plot synopsis because we will get into spoiler territory later.
Yes.
It's impossible to avoid in these kind of movies, especially a movie that's known for twists and turns like Saw. But we basically start out, it supposedly happens between Saw 2 and Saw 3.
I thought one and two.
I'm sorry. That changes.
But I don't think. But again, we'll talk about. But that doesn't really matter for this movie.
Yeah. No. But what you get is you get a basically John Kramer going through his trials and tribulations of the fantastic American healthcare system. And for any of you international listeners out there, if you ever want to make fun of America, just talk shit about our healthcare system, because you're right, it's so stupid. But he's basically trying to get treatment for his cancer, and he's told by a doctor that it's actually right. One of the sad things, and he goes, "You should retire." He goes, "I'm not going to retire. I have a lot of work to do." And he's basically telling him he probably only has a month or two to live, a very, very, very short time. It says they're very cold and callous. And then he hears about, so he's in this cancer survivor group, and then he hears about treatment that he can go get from another gentleman who actually had his cancer put into remission, or basically cured of cancer by an experimental treatment from a doctor from Norway.
But there's one important thing that we want to bring up here is that, so he goes to this cancer survivors group, and then later on he's sitting at a random cafe by himself and runs into this guy, and this guy looks great. Yeah. And that's where he finds out about it. Cause that,
yeah, and that's the catalyst. That
factors into things.
So he contacts this doctor, and they offer him to come get treatment down in Mexico. And then from there, as we all know, anyone, if you haven't watched the Saw franchise, we're going to spoil stuff from the Saw franchise, but the treatment obviously doesn't work because John Kramer eventually does pass away. In fact, and this is where we'll get in a little bit spoiler territory, which I think is kind of obvious, though, is that you find out real fast that this whole cancer treatment place is just a front for making money. They're not doing anything. They're not helping people. They're just taking money from, I don't even want to say gullible people, because gullible is the wrong word. People who are desperate people who really just want help. And which to me is like one of the saddest parts of the whole movie. And then from there, he gets pretty pissed off about this, and he decides to teach people a lesson. And then that's when the gooey stuff starts happening.
You say he wants to play a game?
He wants to play a game. And not Parcheesi.
Not Parcheesi.
Wouldn't that be great, though, if he's just playing checkers or something every time they, like, almost like cutting cards, like cut fingers off every time.
Well, like the cutting cards, the episode of Tales from the Crypt, the movie.
Yeah.
All right. We're just going to do kind of a round robin to start us off, and then we'll just kind of let things go. But Allison, what are your thoughts?
I really liked it. This is not my favorite franchise, and I kind of watched the entire thing in the last like month and a half-ish.
Yeah. Also, as we go along, just want each of us tell kind of our history with Saw and our opinions overall.
Okay. Yeah.
As you were.
In 2004, I saw the first one in theaters. I had no idea what I was getting myself into.
No one did.
It was the only horror movie to ever like give me nightmares, so I never went back to it.
Oh, wow.
Until this one, I saw Spiral. That was my first movie back after the pandemic, and I was like, "Oh, it seems a little bit different." It was, and in a good way. It was like there was more plot, so I was happy about that. But then I heard that Saw 10 was coming out, and I was like, "Fine, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna watch all the sequels." And I went on another podcast to talk about Saw 4. So I was slowly, quickly making my way through all the sequels. The acting in all of them is pretty bad. So I was really happy with the acting in this one. It was not as atrocious. Mm-hmm. I like that we got more time with John Kramer and we got to know him a little bit. I somehow missed all of the trailers. I had no idea what was going to be about.
That's good.
When I saw the trailer after, I was like, this would have been so much less interesting if I would have known that all of these people were full of shit and his treatment was not going to work.
If he knows the basics of something, that either it's not going to work or there's something happening here. But like, we'll talk about the trailer in a second, but
But to Allison's point, though, like some parts in those trailers, like you'll see those
characters, I agree.
And then you immediately know what's going on with that character. And that's
right. Kind of, you don't know exactly who or exactly how. So, I agree that they gave away way too much in the trailer. But
I think it's an issue with almost any modern trailer nowadays. Right. Mm-hmm. It's like it's not the direct. I wish we went back to the director being able to like choose a trailer, because they usually tell like a little story in the trailer. Whereas nowadays it's like, let's just show these cool parts of people will come see this. And it takes away a lot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think after this, I'm like done with trailers. Maybe I'll watch one for a movie from now on, or like a teaser. But like, no, I don't need to, because I've seen so many parts of so many movies in trailers before I see the movie. Yeah. Anyway, that's not about neither here nor there. But I really liked it. I thought it was really well paced. I really couldn't have cared less about all the people that he put in traps, and I was like, you go, John. And I just felt really bad for him. They did what Don't Breathe 2 could not do.
Yes.
And, yes.
And I like the little callback to Saw 3D that we had that we can talk about later, which I don't know if it is an actual callback to Saw 3D. But yeah, I really liked it. The theater experience was really fun too.
We might as well drop it. First of all, what was your favorite as you're going through your marathon, which one was your favorite? And then tell us what that connection is.
I'm going to be real honest. These movies all blend together.
I think that's what's great.
One of the movies that I remember the clearest, I think it was Saw 3D. Was that the one that had the insurance executive?
I have no clue. I can't remember anything from any of them. From like four on, they all are blended together in my head.
Yeah, well, whichever one that was, I think it was Saw 3D or Saw the one that came before it because it was later. But I think that one was my favorite because it highlighted how terrible our healthcare system is. But yeah, I didn't really like any of the sequels that much. Maybe Spiral, just because it was like a little bit different, a little more character development and stuff. So.
And what was the connection that you noticed?
The connection in that movie, the one with the insurance executive, Saw 3D or Saw 6 or
whatever. If it's going to be a spoiler, let's get into that maybe after we give us all our quick reviews, and then we'll get into that.
All right, Mondo, go.
Oh, yeah, I'm with Allison. I love this. I think I gave it 4 stars. The more I think about it, I probably should have given it higher. Much like you mentioned, Allison, what's funny is I read some criticism online about the humanitarian piece of this and how much time they spent on John Kramer and his relationship with Amanda and his relationship with himself, right? And what he's going through. And I thought that was actually my favorite part of the entire movie. Yeah. Like, I felt for this guy. Like, I really did. Like, you really get to see where he's coming from. And like you mentioned in Don't Breathe, they try to take that sadistic character who has a woman. And if you haven't seen Don't Breathe, the end is like they try to turn him in Don't Breathe 2 into like this hero character when there's stuff you just can't come back from, right? John Kramer, at least, has always been the guy. And nothing, and we can argue, right? Like, what he does isn't necessarily right, but he's Dexter in a way that he's doing this to people who have wronged society or wronged him or wronged not good people for the most part. And it was actually a plot point in earlier Saw movies where I thought, like, doesn't he cancel, like, putting, I think, one of the detectives in a trap because the person that takes over for him, because he's like, you weren't playing the games right because you weren't giving people an option to live. Mm-hmm. So, and he's not okay with that because I was like, now you've crossed the line and I have to teach you another lesson. And the fact that they humanize him and show that piece of him and like how he's struggling with cancer and struggling with the healthcare system and struggling with life. And when you see him in everyday life, he's a kind, like, polite old guy. Like, he's saying please and thank you, and then when all the bad stuff starts happening to him, like, you get where his vengeance comes from and why he wants that retribution. And I thought, and the traps are cool in this, the kills are really cool in this. The story overall I thought was great. I really love the twist and how they explained it at the end. Although when we get into later, I have one issue that I hope one of you guys can clear up for me because it's been bugging me. But overall, though, I think this is, in my opinion, this might be my favorite of the franchise.
Wow.
Even over the first one?
What was your favorite before this?
Let me the first one. The first one, I saw, like, much like Allison, I saw in the theater, and I don't give a shit. Like, so many people nowadays would be like, oh, I knew who it was the whole time. They did so much good work to show you that it wasn't that body in the room. That no one, like, I remember seeing the theater and everyone's like at the end, like, people, like, I remember someone started, like, cheering because they're like, holy shit, like, it blew them away. I will say this one is probably my favorite one as far as the first one, though. I almost can't go back and watch it because I know what the ending is. I know the ending now. I know the big twist, and I think it does take away a lot from it. Also, you mentioned the acting. What's funny, in the first one they had the two most prominent actors I've ever had in Cary Elwes and Danny Glover. And to me, they were just hamming it up, thinking no one's going to see this little independent horror film. So we're just going to fuck around, have a good time.
Danny Glover in that movie is beyond ridiculous.
Danny Glover doing his Predator 2 voice. Like, I'm going to get this guy. I couldn't even take it. So and Cary Elwes is such a great actor. I'm like, what are you doing, man? What are you doing in this movie? But I would say, if I had to say, this is probably my favorite. Probably my favorite because of that, because of the human side of it that you didn't get in the other Saw movies. And I'd probably say this one, then number one, and then number three. I really like number three because if I remember correctly, that was the first one that didn't really have a crazy twist, which was kind of the twist.
There was a little bit, but
the twist was very obvious, as in they put all these clues in place so you could figure it out. It wasn't like, holy shit. And I thought that was really clever of them to do after having two movies. They wanted you to expect the twist, but also almost be let down by it in a way because you figured it out. And I thought that was actually pretty smart in the third one, which I thought was a really good one. But I would tell people, if you are a Saw naysayer, like, I hated Jigsaw. Jigsaw pissed me off. I saw it in the theater instead of Blade Runner 2049, and I was mad. To be fair, I'd seen Blade Runner 2049 the day before, but I should just watch that again because that's how mad I was about Jigsaw. So that one really turned me off from it. So when I bought my advance tickets to this, I was thinking, all right, I'm walking in prepared to be let down, and it exceeded every expectation I could have possibly had. And I mean it the best way possible. Like I really love this movie.
Nice.
And the theater was so excited. Like everyone that was there was so excited, at least in my experience.
We don't have those cool crowds out here in Las Vegas, I hate to say. I went to the movie theater by my house, which is kind of in one of the snootier areas in town. And we're leaving, and I just hear these bros like, ah, bruh, that movie was ass, bruh. And I'm like, you're the people that I never want to talk to in my life.
Yeah, I wish, I just think there were enough people. There's like maybe 20 people. I was kind of hoping that there'd be more atmosphere. But yeah, I very distinctly remember seeing the first one. And again, we haven't seen the movie quite the shot that way. That was kind of that in your face using that style. It was completely new at that time, at least in the theatrical realm. And yeah, when he stood up at the end of the first one, everyone lost their shit. I love those moments in the movie theater. Like you can count them on probably on like on your hand that many times, like, you know, an Avengers Endgame moment where everyone is just standing up and just going crazy. That's a magic movie moment. And speaking of the magic of movies, how did they not put that little promo with Billy going through the movie theater, Billy the Doll? How did they not put that at the beginning of this movie?
No idea.
The one that spooses the Nicole Kidman AMC promo. I'm just saying. How cool would that have been if they put that in the movie itself? But yeah, and I saw the second one in the theater. I think I saw the first three in the theater. I love the first. The first one was an experience. I really like the second one. That's my favorite because it kind of has a lot of what made the first one so special and kind of expands upon it. And the rest of them are just kind of rinse and repeat.
Yeah, much like Al said, the second one I remember vividly, third one I remember vividly, and I remember like almost nothing from then on until this movie.
Right, because they start getting too cutesy with the time stuff and the drama, and they kept like so retconning confusing. Themselves over and over again.
Yeah, mm-hmm. so
okay, so yeah, so here are my thoughts on this one. I'm gonna start getting a little spoilery, at least eventually I probably will. I love this.
If you do not want spoilers if you're listening to this and you do not want spoilers, I'd say stop right now and then finish listening after you see the movie.
Yeah. So I remember when I saw the trailer, I'm like, I got the premise. I really wish they didn't reveal Amanda was going to be in it. That was the one thing that I really wish I didn't know going in, because that would have made at least that reveal more fun. And I'm a big, what's her name? I'm blanking.
I was about to correct you on her name, and then my brain just went blank too.
Shawnee Smith. I knew it was Smith something. Shawnee Smith. Which is funny because I ran into Kevin Dillon yesterday. But regardless.
Just Jason's casual
name dropped on the show. okay. So when I saw the trailer, I was like, you know what? That's an interesting idea. If the way that they need to do this is just strip it down to the basics, don't do anything too fancy, don't do anything too, you know, don't do like some time travel, don't have too many flashbacks, I'll try to explain too much, don't have them like going to the future, alter dimensions, you know, keep it simple. Jigsaw in
space.
Jigsaw, exactly.
Oh man, if John Kramer got knocked into the same thing that Jason got knocked into, they cryogenically froze John Kramer and went to the exact same thing that Jason did and became Uber Jason, wouldn't that be badass? Mm-hmm. Like Uber John Kramer.
Save that for the next one. Give us this one. But what I love about this is it is a John Kramer movie, where in all the other ones he's pretty much in the background. He'll pop up here and there, or like characters will run into him, but he's always like in the shadows. And this is his movie. He's the quote unquote hero, anti-hero, whatever you want to call it, of this movie. He's in pretty much the whole thing. And it's so much better for that. There's no huge twist. There's no cops trying to find him, following his trail. It's just straightforward. I thought that the traps might have been the least interesting thing to me in this movie. Like, they're fine. You know, but at this point, you know, is there really that much more to see? I did like to watch them setting up the traps. That was kind of cool. And like I think my favorite part was, so he's a walk around the hospital and he just happens to stop somewhere for water. And he sees this, custodian cleaning a guy's room. And this guy, and the patient's like totally you know, in the coma or, you know, sedated. And this guy starts looking through the patient's wallet and his watch and stuff. And John has like a vision or daydream or something about that, about the trap he's going to put this guy in. And I'm like, I kind of want that movie of just John Kramer going throughout his day, running to people and thinking of all the different traps he's going to put that person in.
Well, I'll be honest on that. I didn't like that scene at first, only because, and then by the end of the movie, that scene was great. But I was thinking, oh no, are we just jumping right into trap? Is it going to be trap after trap after trap?
Yeah, because at first you think that we fast forwarded to when he like got this guy, put him in a trap. Yeah. But this is the trap that's on the trailer too.
Yeah.
But then you find out, no, he's just daydreaming about traps. And he's like writing his journal about traps. Like,
well, and the guy puts the watch away and puts it back when he and John goes, that was a good choice.
Right.
The little humor moments you get with John Kramer is, I think, are really nice. Like that one. And then later on, when he's talking about like, yeah, I have hobbies. Like I have to finish my hobbies. And then
she asked him what your hobbies. Like, I help people value their lives. She's like, oh, like a life coach? She's like, kind of. Sort of. Like, I wonder if they were trying to walk a line because they didn't want it to be too much of a dark comedy. So I'm curious if they cut things out and what they decided to leave in. Like, I would almost want like a sequel of like a dark comedy of John just going through his day.
I don't think you can make a dark comedy out of it, but I think those little bits of humor that aren't out of place. Like sometimes with horror movies, when they try to interject humor, it just seems way out of place for the rest of the movie and they try too hard. This just seems like what someone would say in everyday life, right? Like if I made traps and killed people because to make having them make better life decisions, I'd probably say the same thing. Like I'm just a life coach.
Right.
And he's so shocked in later in the movie when the girl survives the trap and then the doctor like steps on her and he's like, you just killed her.
Yeah. Well, what was cool in that is this one woman that you're kind of pulling for, she's mostly survives. I mean, she's like not in a good shape at all, but he tells Amanda to go take her to the hospital. So he's showing that he does have compassion. Well, he's going to fall through.
And here's where I have some questions here. Mm-hmm. But one thing I do want to say is I loved Amanda in this because while she's Jigsaw's understudy, the one person she has a lot of sympathy for is the drug addict.
Right.
So again, getting into spoiler territory here, we're still listening here. And if you haven't seen the movie, but you want the spoilers, basically when John Kramer finds out this whole thing was a ruse, all these people, the doctors and Gabriella, who was like the person he kind of got, I don't want to say he was swooning over, but she was the first person that was really kind to him in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And he immediately went, he goes to buy her a bottle of tequila because she says she loves tequila for good luck. And then, which is kind of a foreshadowing because then the doctor says, oh, wait, you can't have that because you're getting surgery. But
well, and then there's the whole bit about like, oh, it's made only in this area. So I'm like, oh, yeah. That's how he's going to figure out where they were.
Yes.
And blindfold them to take them in for his security.
And they but what they did with her is like, I love the fact that Amanda had some sympathy for her, saying like, I know you think she's a bad person, but this is what these painkillers and shit will do to you. Because she did the painkillers because she goes and buys painkillers from the veterinarian. And she's like always, she kind of hints to her, like, I'm trying to help you to shut the fuck up and stop talking. So the one thing I didn't understand about this movie, the one issue I have. So by the end of it, you find out that this whole thing's been orchestrated. John expected them to get her, the doctor's boyfriend to show up and try to kill them. But when Gabriella survives a trap, and you're rooting for Gabriella because because she's the only one that's showing any kind of empathy. And when she survives a trap and did he plan on her surviving the trap and her and them getting stopped before they got to the hospital?
Because Jigsaw's all about contingency plan. So it's like, if this, then that. It's like, I guess if she makes it, then she'll try to get to the hospital and try to get Amanda back in time. So he probably has like a backup for a backup. So that's kind of how
I saw that. You think, though, he had the guy chained up and then unchained him after she survived.
Right.
You think he just left the guy chained up and then let that. But I mean, that's a small nitpick if I have to nitpick in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, there's always things you can nitpick in these movies. How does he know this? How does he know that? But so
I think he's very good with psychology. I think he knows humans and knows their actions. And I think when he told Amanda to take her to the hospital, I don't think Amanda was going to take her to the ER and like sit there with her.
No,
I think she was going to like
go
to the ER and then leave and come back.
Because so. If she stayed there, I feel like a doctor would have some questions, and maybe the police would get involved.
Right. How did this happen?
Right. So just to unpack the ending a little bit. So basically everyone that he encounters is in on it, but there's this one guy who is a previous patient who's just kind of on his way out while he's coming in. And I guess in all of our heads, we think that he's an actual patient and he's coming back to the warehouse where all the shit's going down to try to, you know, start some shit. We find out that he's actually in cahoots and he was part of the plan. And I was kind of curious because they said that he had thyroid cancer, which, you know, so he had like a big cut on his neck. I'm like, that would be a hard thing for them to fake, taking out like, you know, something on your neck like that. So, but I kind of like yada yada over that. Like, okay, it's just saw logic. And then he shows up again. I'm like, oh no, he's going to be the X factor. And then it turns out that he was actually in on it. I'm like, oh, okay. So, but that was what's cool about that is it, at least for us, the audience, it makes us feel like that Jigsaw does not have the upper hand at that point.
Well, and
even though he does, but
well, and the doctor. So, the doctor is the daughter of the doctor that's actually figured out this cancer treatment. Maybe. And they never, but they never kind of say like she's constantly telling Jigsaw throughout the or John throughout the movie. My dad, I might not be real, but my dad actually is, and he can actually help you. I'll call him. And at that point, John's just like, fuck you and all that. And maybe we'll get a follow up. But yeah, right. You're as anybody would in that situation. Like if you ever read any of the horrific accounts of how of torture throughout the years and how we treated prisoners, psychologists have proven that like at no point is putting someone in duress or torturing them a good way to get information from someone, because someone will tell you anything they want, anything you want to know if you put their life in danger. And it's
I was wondering if that was going to be a twist that turns out their father actually could have saved him. And like, he kind of
maybe be smart, but just the way they're preying on this. So as a guy, I think I've talked to you guys. And also, I told you, if you listen to our show, you know, but I got diagnosed with diabetes. And once I did, I saw all these ads popping up my fucking Facebook feed and Instagram feed about all these pills that can help you. And I'm not going to lie, I'm saving some of those thinking maybe I should try this. Maybe I should try this. And I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but normally I don't fall for that kind of stuff. But when you're not feeling well and you have a medical illness, it's very easy to throw all that. And that's kind of what John did, right? All for him being a genius, he was just like, he wanted it so bad. He wanted health so bad that he was willing to let go of his sensibilities. And like the most heartbreaking thing for me in hindsight was when he's laying in the fake hospital bed. Mm-hmm. And he wakes up and he thinks he's cured and he smiles and he says, you see, a tear run out of his eye because he's so happy that he might get a chance to live. And like, and then that's why when he eventually finds his way to this clinic and finds out it was fake, his rage is so much more like, you know, impactful, because it's a whole 180 on your thinking, hey, I'm cured. I'm going to beat this, suddenly to where nothing fucking happened and I'm still going to die. And now I've been wronged.
Yeah. I mean, Tobin Belk is a very good performance. Like, I mean, he's been doing this character for like 20 years almost, but this is the first time that he's able to like really dig into that and show that range. So yeah, he's really good. So again, to unpack the ending a little bit, so that we get the impression that, Cecilia and this other guy have the upper hand, and that they're the real monsters in this scenario because they killed off the other girl, then that they're gonna, you know, kill off John Kramer and Amanda. And then Carlos, the little boy that was just kind of hanging out earlier, shows up to do his soccer kicking practice. And I guess that is the X factor that John didn't account for either. So they put Carlos, the boy, and John into the final trap. But what they don't know is that John like rigged the trap so he could get out of it easy, or that it could like trigger. Oh, and then when they go up to get the money, they go and trigger their trap and locking them in the office.
And that's what unlocks their trap. And it's what was interesting about that was they kind of had a cool moment at the beginning, again, showing John's humanity, how much of a humanitarian he kind of is, I guess, where he helps a boy fix his bike. And then he goes, pull. He goes, how do you say that in Spanish? He tells him how to pull. And then he uses that later on. He's saying, don't pull the lever. Don't pull the lever. And it's almost very noble in the fact that John was telling him, don't pull the lever. I'm just going to die. Like, and Amanda can finish this. Mm-hmm. And because I imagine the idea was with him and Amanda being strapped to that contraption, she knew the drill too. And they'd be able to go back and forth, probably had time to where go down, count to 10, pull back, you know. But And that to me was like, that's when that's was such so smart in the movie. Cause I thought I had it all figured out the whole time. I'm figuring out like, all right, where he knows what's going on, because, and they make references to it too. Like earlier on when he pulls the gun out, Amanda goes, "See, I told you he'd fail his test."
Well, yeah, I kind of figured, I knew that there's no way that he would like leave the gun in the closet. I thought he would have put an explosive or something, so when he tries to shoot them, it blow up his hand.
But adding that child in as a factor, like, just completely kind of made my brain kind of think differently about the movie. So I'm like, oh shit, now this has got real. Like, where is this going to go?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of that again. My figuring was that Jigsaw being Jigsaw, that he manipulated the gun, and then the final trap, he like. I was wondering, like, if in every trap he has like a fail safe that only he knows. So no. In this situation, like, that's just kind of, you know, the mastermind that he would be, that he would know how to get out of his own traps.
I'm gonna say no.
Yeah. I don't know why. Why would he have thought that he was gonna get put in his own trap? See, the thing is, I don't think that I didn't get the idea that them pulling the bag off had anything to do with their trap.
I felt like the idea was gonna be so he knew that he knew who that guy was. And when he showed up, he kind of knew, like, because he makes a phone call later on the show. He makes a phone call to his detective buddy who says, oh, yeah, these people are married or whatever. They're not married, but they're a boyfriend and girlfriend. So when that guy showed up, that his test was, are you going to try to save this woman and fuck us over? Or are you just going to do the noble thing and walk away? And I think his plan was, if the guy does get the gun, she's sadistic as fuck. They're going to try to put us in. We designed this last trap for us to be in if we have to be in it. That was almost, and maybe that was like that optional kind of curveball. Like, we'll see where this goes if we need this. Cause and at the end, I like it. Cause the boyfriend goes, hey, how come there's this many of you and you're the last one surviving, yet that last trap was designed for two people. And that's when he puts two and two together. Like, oh shit. He knew what was going to happen. And that's when the doors close and all the phosphorus comes out.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I think he was thinking, so Jigsaw's plan was either that Cecilia and that guy were either going to go in the trap, but they didn't know like how to, but they would probably screw each other over trying to get to save themselves. Or they put him and Amanda in the trap, and the two of them had something worked out. They could survive long enough while they go up to get the money, and which triggers the final trap. So you mentioned the part where he calls the detective. So at first I was wondering, how is he going to figure out who everyone is and all that? And it turns out that they don't show us that, just so that we don't know that he knows who Parker, the boyfriend or whatever, is. But then he places a call to his detective friend, and that's turns out to be Costas Mandler, the detective Hoffman. And what his job is to find the guy from the cancer support group. So did you guys stay for the extra scene?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
can I rant for a second about after credit scenes? Nothing pisses me off more than a movie that makes you sit through fucking 5 minutes of credit scene after credit scene when they could have just tacked it on to the end of the movie. I like the fact they did the smart thing here where the credits played for like 20 seconds. That was it before that scene popped on.
Right. So in that scene, they go back to the infamous bathroom from the first two or however many movies that bathroom shows up in. They have the guy tied up. And he doesn't have the scar that he had before. And Detective Hoffman was like, of all the guys to piss off, he had to piss off Jigsaw, which again, they put that line in the trailer. So in my head, I'm like, oh, there's going to be some sort of cop thing where the cop's going to be like telling, oh, you shouldn't fuck this guy over. But that scene never happened. So I was really kind of confused when the credits started rolling. And then they put that guy in a trap and, you know, yada, yada, yada. But my question is, so this guy is a plant. So is he going to different cancer support groups, finding people like targets?
Well, the one thing, and I want your guys' opinion on this too, I don't think all these people were employees of her. I think she's just people she found. Because look, she targets a drug addict, a guy with obviously who has, you know, he's not very morally just as he's selling drugs to people. So he got Gabriella, he got her drug dealer, he got her boyfriend, obviously. She's obviously, I think she's finding people from place to place, because when she's in her house at the very end, and what a badass house was that, by the way. Like,
yeah, that was cool.
But if I know anything about horror movies, is I'm never buying a house with that much glass. Like, anytime you buy a house, of that, you're in like the 13 ghost house, or this shit's gonna happen to you. But they do a really good job at, because she gets a phone call and she goes and she's telling someone, hey, we want to get you in for treatment. We're gonna be in Belize in a month. So these people are all expendable to her. She's paying them to do their role, and that's it. And that comes in like, I was thinking about this, right? That's the morally ambiguous question is he's punishing people who just wanted to make a dime. But at the end of the day, though, like, as a human being, you have a right to say no if someone wants to do something that fucked up for money. And because they said no, they obviously then are.
It begs the question, how much knowledge did each of them have? Like, did that one guy who was faking being a cancer survivor, do you think he was just signing people up for a study, or
it doesn't matter? If I'm gonna give you $10,000, you just have to pretend to be an anesthesiologist. Maybe you say yes, and then when you realize it's going on, you're like, hold on a second. I didn't sign up for this.
Okay, but even then, the cancer survivor guy, he's going around using his real name, is being tracked and everything. Like,
again, he's someone who I think was probably a plant, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because he's a plant, but he's probably someone that just gets hired from city to city. Because obviously, he was preying on those cancer survivors. So I bet what he does is he goes in the group, finds other survivors, and then goes and follows them, catches them in public, and is trying to get each one to sign up. They have resources, right? Because they have money. They probably know who has money.
Right. And I did like that, like, they did their Amanda and John did their research on everything. Like, they had their whole scheme figured out. That was pretty cool. Because they were trying to tell them that, like, you know, it doesn't work for everybody. They, like, got them the list of their past patients. And, like, no, all these people are dead now. No one survived. That was cool.
That kid is gonna need so much therapy.
Well, he's got enough money to pay for it now.
That's the silver lining of this.
And
yeah,
what's interesting, I think his dad Oscar was the only Oscar was a boy. His dad, they mentioned, was a caretaker of the grounds, was probably the only person not in it. They never showed him again. So I do like the fact that they obviously, John Kramer did his research and realized this guy's not in on it. He's literally just a groundskeeper of this fucking building.
I mean, just think about the fact that we are almost 20 years, maybe it's 20 years now, from the first Saw movie. The 10th one has just come out, and we're saying it's the best in the series. Not only that, but it ends with Jigsaw walking out with saving a child, basically, and, like, saving the day. Like, that's such a twist. that's the ultimate twist. They made this route for Jigsaw as the ultimate hero of the movie.
I love it. I love it. Do you want,
like, he's walking out with, like, this, like, nuclear family with him and Amanda and a little boy. Oh. Like, oh, that's sweet. That's a good family story.
Are they going to adopt more children as they go along their torture traps?
I mean, they're going to have an heir at some point, right?
Yeah. Do you want there to be more Saw movies?
Ooh, I don't know if you can get it this good again.
They're going to make a Saw 11. I think it's already been announced. Well, they're going to do it. And it's going to be a direct sequel to Saw 10. I think Saw is a franchise where you could do a million sequels because there's so much ambiguity between movies. But I also think, though, like, you don't have to. It's so rare that you can do like a 10th installment in a movie and have it be so good.
Jason X, which, you know, you and I love, but we love it because it's so wacky and just camp, and, you know, we don't love it because it's cool, a good movie.
Yeah, but Jason's also a different character, whereas you can put him into a campy film, and you're not going to see that movie expecting, like, some great moral, I've used the word moral a lot, and I don't know what the fuck's going on. But you don't expect any, like, great awakening by watching a Jason movie or anything to be underneath the surface. And Jigsaw or in Saw movies, you do kind of expect some kind of something there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's hard. Like, that's hard for them to do. I don't know where they would go if they did an 11. It does obviously open itself for a sequel, because at the end, you never actually see the cancer, quote unquote, survivor die. You just see the beginning of the trap, and that's when it ends. And
yeah,
Saw 11 starting with that. And again, if I went back and watched all the movies, maybe I could say, oh, this is what they could do. But
But see, that's what I loved about this one. It was completely divorced pretty much from any, like, if the marketing didn't tell us that it was between one and two, I would have no idea where this was in the canon. And that, and again, that's what I loved about it. Like, it didn't care about any of the other stuff. And, like, I think that's what I would want from another movie. But I just don't know. They have to come up with something relevant that happened.
You could show his relationships of the characters. I mean, like, with Cary Elwes and stuff, how they basically end up having a relationship. You could show that kind of stuff. But I honestly don't know how good it's going to be.
I think I would want Amanda. Allison, go ahead.
No, you would know where this falls in the timeline because John dies, like, after three.
Well,
I'm saying, like, between the first and the third movie, like, there's nothing, they don't tie anything in to, like, explain that it happens here or there.
Well, hold on a second. You would kind of know because in number two, remember, Amanda is going through the traps.
But no, because she was a plant in number two.
She was a plant, but that was also, I think, they explained in one of the other movies that was basically when Jigsaw decided, that was like another second test for her. Well, can this person be my understudy?
I think if there was going to be another one, I would want an Amanda movie. Give Shawnee Smith the spotlight. That's the only thing I can really think of.
Yeah.
That would not be.
I'd be for it. I think it'd be cool.
Can I just talk about the connection between it saw six and it saw 3D? I don't know if it's real. I wonder if this doctor's dad, I don't think she's a doctor, but if her dad really existed, because in Saw Six, when you first meet the insurance executive, he's telling a guy that he's going to cancel his insurance plan if he goes to Norway to try this experimental treatment.
Holy shit, that's Norway. Awesome.
Yeah.
That's an awesome catch.
That could be another movie where John is going after her father and, like, going after a whole network of these.
And again, though, if we look at John Kramer as being the genius that he is, I think he'd have done that research, right? Like, he'd have known before he'd have researched her and been like, oh, she doesn't even have a dad. Her dad's a truck driver in Norway or something like that. Or like, and it was an actor she hired to go on the internet and pretend like whatever.
Yeah.
What was I gonna say?
I did like when he's looking up the doctor, how they actually had, like, the old school, like, early 2000s web browser interface and everything.
I was looking for that, for those little technology or, like, societal things that would, like, give away what year it was.
Oh, yeah.
Goodness.
I love a good fake browser. Or fake desktop UI. But when, like you said, we barely talked about the traps. Do we have, like, any, like, they're okay? What'd you guys think?
The one where he has to do brain surgery on himself, would somebody have really been able to do that? Because wouldn't you go into a state of shock after you drill through your skull?
I think, with all of these, I think you pretty much.
So there are people, because again, there are people who do self-trepidation where they put holes in their skull to release pressure and open their third eye. That's a real thing. And people do it themselves.
Yeah, but, you know.
I don't think drilling into my skull would hurt all that bad. I think poking tweezers into my brain would suck, but just like the actual skull part of it.
My boyfriend leaned over when I was squirming. He was like, your brain doesn't have any pain receptors in it.
Right.
So that's the part that wouldn't hurt. It's the drilling through your skull that would hurt. I might be wrong. I'm not a doctor. But me either.
I just hope I never have to find out.
Please, knock on wood. Thank you.
Then there's the other trap where the woman is held up by her arm by one chain and is by the leg. But if you just did the one by her arm, wouldn't she just fall to the ground and that would be it? Why do the bottom one first?
Because then you can't sway back and forth. Because remember, the fake doctor tells her, do the ankle first, then you can swing out of the way of the radiation gun or whatever it was. And then remember, she swings out of the way and the fucking thing just moves over. And I was like,
I do like the theory that the fake doctor was actually trying to get everyone else killed.
However, you're not wrong on the fact that if she'd have done the arm first, she'd have still fallen to the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not wrong in that aspect.
Okay. And again, like, the whole, like, cutting off your leg. Right. The whole, like, using the Garrett, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Like, you'd pass out so quickly from blood loss from that.
You would think so. But she did a tourniquet on her leg first.
Okay.
Fine. And adrenaline is a hell of a drug. So I think that's why, like, You know, one of the criticisms of Saw movies is how would anyone stay awake during this or in this pan of pain? Because your adrenaline's that high in a fight or flight situation. Like, just from doing jujitsu, I've broken fingers and shit and, like, been hurt and not noticed it till, like, later on after I take a shower, I'm laying on the couch. I'm like, why did my ribs hurt? Oh, that's right. I made a weird popping sound this morning. And now it hurts really bad because when your adrenaline's that high, you don't feel that.
All right. Well, again, these are the movies.
Not saying it wouldn't hurt, it wouldn't suck. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying your body will do amazing things to compensate for that when you're in that fight or flight mode.
Mondo, I mean, what I'm hearing is that you're daring a real life Jigsaw put you in a trap so you can
survive. No, absolutely not. Fuck that.
All right. No. All right, sorry, I misheard.
This is goddamn. I have such a good jujitsu joke, and no one's gonna get. But the Saw trap is just never mind. Rusamar Pahala is having you in a heel hook, and you have to get out before he snaps. Never mind.
Oh yeah, totally.
He's a fighter that was famous for a couple times after fights. He'd have people, and he's used to the heel hook. So the heel hook, what it does, it locks your leg in place, and then you twist their heel, and it tears all the ligaments in the knee. And you don't feel pain until everything tears. Before then, it's just pressure, and then when it pops, everything tears. It's so that's why you can't even – a lot of gyms won't even let you practice them until you're a brown belt or higher because at that point, I practice them, but I know, like, if I lock it up on somebody, we just let go and train. We don't. But if you're in competition and someone locks it up, you should know to tap. But what he would do is he would lock it in the UFC. Someone would tap out, and he would just keep holding it and cranking it until he broke their fucking leg, until he fucked their knee up. So that'd be a good Saw trap. Like, okay. This Brazilian guy's going to come in and just crank on your leg until he –
All right, I gotta go. I'm gonna vomit.
Yeah.
Look up heel hooks. They're fun.
All right. Let's do our rating on this. Let's do 0 to 5. 5 being the best, 0 being the worst. You can do half points. Allison, what would you give this movie? And I guess the question is whether you do it like on the pantheon of film or just as a Saw movie.
I think as film.
Yeah.
As a film. Okay. I'm between, I think I'm at a 4.5. So that the only one, I'm debating, do I like this one more or the first one more? And I use the word very loosely because I,
well, again, I don't know, 5 being like Schindler's List level of a film.
That's a movie to compare this to.
I'm just saying, comparing the pantheon of film, 5 would be one of the best movies of all time. So 4.5 being a hair under.
Oh, I'll
you can say 4.5. Jason's being dramatic.
Yeah, I don't know. Schindler's List is one of the best movies ever because I don't really want to ever rewatch it.
Well, that's fine too.
Yeah. I don't ever want to rewatch Jigsaw, but I wouldn't give it a 5.
there's Schindler's List
is a little bit better.
Yeah, a little bit more realistic too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll say 4.5 then. Yeah.
All right. Mondo.
Yeah, I'm upping mine by a half point because we talked about it. I like it even more. So I'm going to go 4.5. I think this is the best, the best in the series. And I think everyone should go see this.
Yeah, I'm in the 4. Again, as far as all film is concerned, as an overall film, not as a Saw film, I'll put this as a 5. This is one of the best. It's in that realm, but overall film, I'll say a 4. It's very, very good.
This is one of the rare horror films. One of the rare modern horror films that I'm looking forward to rewatching again. Yeah, but I can't when it comes out on physical media. I'm gonna buy it, and I'm pretty excited to watch it again.
Cool. I will not, but I think I might go see it again with my friend who hasn't seen it yet. So. But I don't know if I'll be able to recreate that theater experience. Everyone cheered so loudly when they pulled the bag down and the door
That's
locked.
That's cool.
And the guy in the front row had his Jigsaw doll with him.
Oh, really?
Which was great, but also creepy.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. That's cool, though.
I will say, I do love the musical cue from the Hello Zep or whatever it's called.
Oh, my God.
That cue gets me every time. And also, the music in this was really good. It was very atmospheric and spooky. Yep. I really liked it.
I don't remember it. But, yeah, Hello Zep is great. If I was
going to
get married, that would be the music.
That'd be awesome.
You just walk down to Hello Zep.
And then get to the altar and be like, would you like to play a game?
Yeah.
You have 45 years to,
to complete this challenge. All right, Mondo, give us our song of the day.
Alrighty, so I'm going to, as an old man, I don't go to as many concerts. I love live music, but I don't go to as many concerts as I used to because my feet hurt. I've been standing for a while because I'm old and my back starts hurting. And then I'm just annoyed by humanity at this point. Like, you put a bunch of fucking metalheads in one place. A, I don't want to talk to anybody because have you ever met someone that's like, oh, you're into horror? Do you, and then all they want to do is say, do you like this movie? Do you like this movie? Do it. Metalheads like that 10 times 10,000. And then if you say you don't like a band or like a band, they want to judge you. So they're not people I usually hang out with. So, but my tattoo artist is there, so we hung out and shot the shit. It was a good time. But I went to a live show of the band Cloak, who were opening for Ghost Bath and Nuada. And I left after Ghost Bath, and I wish I would have left before Ghost Bath. No offense to Ghost Bath, but you guys were Ghost not good Bath, live. Like
Ghost Bath for Bath. Ghost or Bath?
Bath dead, for no ghosts. Bath for ghosts, I'm assuming. Okay. They call themselves depressive suicidal black metal. I call them black metal cosplay because that's more what it feels like. Like people, it feels like people who, it feels almost like, have you ever had like someone who's not really a big horror fan, but they want to cash in on horror, so they make a horror movie? That happens all the time, and you can just tell that, oh, this is a cash in. I'm looking at you, the nun. But it's kind of what they remind me of, and not my cup of tea. And they're also really problematic in the fact when their first record came out, they used all kinds of Chinese symbology and did their Bandcamp page all in Chinese. And turns out it was a couple guys from North Dakota that started the band. Oh, God. And it's kind of weird to me when you're trying to gain notoriety by saying that you're from a country that you're not from. That's just kind of weird to me. And then once the media picked up on it, got started like getting behind them because it was so cool to see a band of this genre come from China. That's when they kind of took a step back. We're like, actually, we just like using symbology. Like, fuck off, dude. It's not going to fucking. It's like you'll see, and this happens too in the fucking black metal scene. You'll see a motherfucker who like they'll find the guy's got a picture of a swastika on him or something. He'll be like, yeah, actually, it's a sun wheel from the sun. Like, fuck off, dude. Like, no one is getting that tattooed without pretending. They know what it, you know what it is. Don't, you're not theming that bullshit. Anyhow, though, the band Cloak is from Atlanta, Georgia. They say they're from Atlanta, and they play awesome black and fucking thrashy death metal, and it's phenomenal. And they killed it. And I just want to give a shout out to those guys because they actually had a lot of van troubles and almost didn't make the tour because their van broke down. They had to pay all's money, but they came and they just fucking killed it in front of a decent Vegas crowd, which is pretty rare for a concert. And so the song I'm going to pick, because it actually does kind of fit in with the name of the song, kind of fits in with this movie. And it's called With Fury and Allegiance by the band Cloak. Off their latest record, which came out in May, Black Flame Eternal. Check those guys out. They are fucking killer.
Awesome. Thank you, Mondo. All right. Yeah, going over to our Patreon pit. For those that don't know, we do have a Patreon. And we post weekly Would You Rathers and just some other fun, goofy stuff on there. Good little community to hang out with. Also, we have our Simpsons Trios of Horror episodes. We're going to have 3 coming out in the month of October. So get your Treehouse of Horror on. Rewatch some episodes from Disney Plus. Listen to our Patreon episodes. All a good time. This week's Would You Rather is, would you rather swim in a pool full of Nutella or a pool full of maple syrup? And Mondo, you said my would you rathers were getting a little too serious, so this is something nice and sweet for you.
Well, dude, I'm diabetic. I'm dead either way. Like,
you don't have to ingest it.
Have you ever gone swimming and not gotten water in your mouth?
Spit it out.
Mondo, there's no pleasing you.
I prefer to swallow.
I try, but...
Thanks. Jason just glossed over that comment. That's fine.
No, what'd I you got say? I see you. He said he likes to swallow.
I'd rather swallow. I'm not a quitter.
Well, that's one way to keep a happy relationship, but
yeah, dude. So, if I had to choose one, it'd be Nutella because it'd be less likely to get in my mouth.
There you go.
Nutella smells amazing.
Yeah, I love the smell of Nutella. My kids love Nutella. I don't eat it because, yeah, it's like sugar paste, basically. But it does smell really good. And, you know, I like maple syrup. Maple syrup has its moment on pancakes and whatnot, but It's just, that'll be really sticky. And like, I'm a pretty hairy guy and I don't want to have to get that hair. I'm just saying, I'm being honest. I'm living my truth. All that maple syrup in my beard would be a nightmare.
Me too.
Allison.
I would say maple syrup. You can't swim through Nutella. I love Nutella. I don't really eat it that often, but like, you can't swim through Nutella. You can get stuck in Nutella, but you can't swim through it. So I'm going to swim through maple syrup. And I'm going to spit out what gets in my mouth. I like to spit, Mondo. And yeah, I'm talking all about right. maple syrup. Get your mind out of the gutter.
Hey, like I'm swallowing maple syrup, and I'm not spitting out maple syrup. Maple syrup's fucking. Actually, I am nowadays, but.
Well, yeah. Well, interesting. 100% of our Patreons voted for maple syrup. Yes. So Mondo and I are the outliers.
Well, I feel like I can float on top of Nutella because, again, like, and if you did want to get a good workout, man, imagine the resistance of trying to swim through Nutella. Like, it'd be a good workout.
Like, I wouldn't want it like a 12-foot deep Nutella because you just kind of like get stuck. You're either going to get stuck or sink. In that, but like if it's like a 3 or 4 foot, like you're just kind of wading through Nutella, that'd be kind of fun.
Jason, you're like 6'5", dude. You could be, it could be 6 foot Nutella, you'd be fine. As long as your eyes and your nose are above the.
I don't know.
I'm worried about the beard, man.
I don't know if you've ever like looked at a thing of Nutella, but it does not move. You can't float on it. You can just like sink into it.
Yeah, I don't think you. That's what I mean, though. It's more stable, I guess. I don't know.
We're thinking about this way too deeply.
I feel like both these options kind of suck. Like, I don't want to do either. Like, I don't want to swim through.
This is a saw trap.
Yeah. Now if the options I have to swim to the other side to survive, then yeah, then I want to definitely do maple syrup. But if this is like, if I just have to hang out in this fucking pool full of some weird substance for X amount of time, I'd rather be Nutella. But if I have to actually achieve something inside this pool, like do a backstroke or something, then I want maple syrup.
There's no pressure on keeping it nice and fun.
I don't think you're gonna float on Nutella though. I think you're gonna sink into it. Like you're gonna lay there for a second, and then you're just going to down to
the
bottom, and then you're gonna drown in Nutella. So
again, we never said how deep the pool was. So
I've had a good run.
All right, rest in peace.
All right,
there's worse ways to go, like. Having your eyeballs sucked out by a vacuum, that would kind of suck.
Whoa, that was gnarly.
I remember everyone, when they saw the poster, was like, what's going to come down those tubes? Nobody was mm-hmm. like, my eyeballs are going to get sucked out. I was like,
yeah,
that's a twist.
I thought, what kind of PSI that would require.
I thought it was going to be like acid or something, right? Yeah. Like some kind of cleaning solution. And then I realized, oh shit, he was vacuuming. And then it all made sense to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a fun
All movie. Right. Before we wrap up, we have our advice section. And something I realized, Allison, that we have a connection in is that you are an HR professional. And I did HR for like a year or so before I realized I hated it and quit.
I do hate it and I want to quit, but like I just keep getting sucked back into it.
Well, I figured what advice would you give people when they're talking to their HR professionals?
They're not on your side ever. They don't have your interest. They don't have your interest in the back of their mind. They are there to protect the employer. So record everything and put everything in email. Just protect yourself because they're not there to help you or protect you.
At least my experience, we're there to help you, but we're not going to protect you. I agree with that part. My biggest thing was fill out your forms correctly. Double check. Because if you leave out something, you forget to fill out a section. Yeah. And you miss your deadline. If it's past the enrollment, you're screwed.
Oh, so I mean, you're being so practical. I'm being so cynical. Like, yeah, fill out your forms so you get your
Yeah, but you're not wrong. Like, my current company, we're small enough to where we have no HR department. So it makes it really easy. But if I have an issue, I just walk in my president's office and be like, hey, can we talk for a minute? He's like, yeah, we figure shit out. But working for a company that has a piece of fruit as the name of their company. It's not called banana.
Orange. I miss banana. I love orange.
Yeah.
I said a moment where I was like, fuck, man, I miss eating bananas. Bananas are delicious. And I can't have those anymore. But it's HR, what he said, was there to protect the company. Didn't give it. I can tell you how many people had issues due to shitty advice they were given by HR.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, shitty advice. Advice that protected the company but didn't protect the individual.
So, Allison, you need to write a new Saw movie about an HR department that gets that crosses Jigsaw. We terminate his. We don't cash his vacation time in the on the right cycle.
He doesn't get paid out. His benefits get canceled while he has cancer. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he has to go after the HR department.
Yeah.
Man, imagine how much different the Saw movies would be if they're based in like Canada, where you have universal healthcare.
Well, you only get 1 year of parental leave. How dare you?
Have you seen, there's a great video to look up. It's a German employer yelling at it's an American who moved to Germany, and his employer is yelling. He goes, I need to see you. This is very serious. He goes, you have only taken 18 days off this year. You need to take next week off and the week after that off right now. I will not stand for anything less. Oh my God. Due to the German laws, you have to take this much time off. Like, fuck, dude. Like, imagine living in a civilized country where we don't have a mandate for how many days off employers have to give you, or sick time they have to give you, or the fact that, imagine not being able to go to the doctor when you're sick and need help. God, imagine that.
Shut up, you.
It's easy if you can.
Well, I've mentioned this before. When I was younger and dabbled in libertarianism, and the reason why I say dabbled is because once I realized that libertarianism most times is a fake word for racism, that I got the fuck out of libertarianism. But I used to have arguments with people who were into libertarianism, saying they'd be like, "Oh, we shouldn't pay for someone else's healthcare." I'm like, "Hold on, because libertarians are super into the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. And in the fucking Declaration of Independence is every man has a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Fucking life and pursuit of happiness tie right into your physical health."
Yeah.
Or emotion, or mental health, or whatever you want to say. And that should be 100% something we fucking pay for. And if someone's mad at me for saying this and wants to never listen to us again, fuck you, I don't want you listening to our podcast. We should be taking care of our people in this country.
Yeah, and we should also
add I'm the one... I'm the one that works in healthcare.
Was that Allison?
And we should also, while we're, making the government better, let's add the word woman or women.
Yeah.
Yes, 100%. They should get rid of the word man and just put persons, any person who lives in this country. I'm 100% with
you. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's funny is growing up, I never really thought that it mattered. And then I realized, oh, wait, because we live in a fucking overwhelming patriarchal society, yes, it does matter.
Yay, America.
Yay.
Man, my hope for America is that as people like, when I say young people like us, we're not, I mean like our younger generations. I know everyone shits on the younger generations about their work ethic and whatnot. And there's some validity there. I'm not going to lie. But the one thing our younger generation has that we didn't have, and I mean this in the best way possible, is they're way more emotionally intelligent than we are. Maybe not are now, because a lot of us are going to therapy and all that, but we were basically their age. And I really hope that
developmental cycle.
Yes. As these younger people start getting into power in politics, they don't follow the footsteps of fucking Strom Thurmond and those pieces of shit. And he's dead, but he should die 40 years before he did. But they don't follow us, but they follow their hearts and actually do things to really change our country in a positive manner. Like, I've already accepted that I'll die with I'll be paying for healthcare until I'm dead. I've accepted that, but I hope like my daughter's not, or if she decides someday to have a child, which I don't think she will, which is totally fine, but, or adopts a child, that they'll live in a world at some point, or a United States at some point that has fucking healthcare and things that are put in place to protect everybody, no matter what sex, gender, nationality, et cetera, you are.
All right,
man. I need to rant about politics now, but how much I fucking just hate.
Oh, we're getting to election year. It's only going to get better.
Oh yeah, it's all gonna get better. How many more times are we gonna have the Mitch glitch?
Yeah, well, okay.
A buddy of mine put it best when Dianne Feinstein passed away, and he said, "I'm not happy she's dead, but I'm happy she's no longer in power." And I think it's a very kind of neutral way to put it. But there was a great, I think it was hardtimes.net did a meme, and it's Mitch McConnell. And it says, Mitch McConnell relieved to find out that shadowy figure at Congress isn't there for him this week. That's a picture of the Grim Reaper, like on a horse.
That's dark.
But, you know, but realistically, like if that person, again, was working for a company and had decision-making power in a company, you'd have shareholders trying to vote them out the board and get them out of there. Oh, yeah. Why do we allow these people to run our country? And in the nicest way possible, when I'm 60 years old, I have no business trying to make policy and law for people that are 20 years old. It's just none of us do. And that's just it's just reality. Like, our policy should not be dictated by people who are going to be dead in fucking 10 years and don't give a shit about climate change. Don't give a shit about the generations after them. So it should be, we need a change. The idea of fucking government was that representation for the people, people that are like you can do that, you know, and we're not there.
Yeah. If you can collect Social Security, you can't run for president.
That's a good one. Yeah. I'd be down for that.
That's assuming there's gonna be Social Security around for much longer. All right. On that note, let's wrap up the episode. Allison, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people find you?
Thank you for having me. This was so much fun. You can find me at Who's Their PC on Instagram and Twitter, and then whostheirpodcast.com, and then all your platform, your podcast podcatchers you can check out there.
All right. Well, next week we're going to be covering The Exorcist, The Believer. We'll see how that one comes out. Hold it, cross my fingers.
You know what? Watching the trailer in front of Saw 10, I was like, you know what? I'm kind of warming up on this, so we'll see.
Lukewarm.
But we'll don't know if I'm be able to see it by next week, so you guys might be without me.
I'll be seeing it on Tuesday.
Allison, maybe
we might have you back.
Because I'll be on the road all this week, nowhere near a movie theater, so I don't think I'm going to get a chance to see it. And then next weekend is, if you guys are listening to this is coming out on the morning of the Joe Bob Jamboree here in Las Vegas, which I'll be hanging out at. So if you see me there on this last day, find me and I'll give you a stick.
Okay, we appreciate everyone for listening. We would really appreciate if you give us a rating or review on iTunes, a rating on Spotify, and check out our YouTube for videos of these podcasts. And with that, we thank you for listening to Dads from the Crypt.
Adios.
Bye-bye.
Follow Dads from the Crypt on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or I will follow you to the grave. No, seriously, you really should watch, but be careful what you ask for. You may get it.